Tonight, I'd like to ask you a question. The question does not require an immediate reply, although I'm sure that some of you would be able to supply one. Rather, the question is being posed for the purposes of pondering and reflection. It is a question to take away with you, and to which you might give your reasoned consideration, if you so choose. The question is this. Why are you here? I do not mean by this, why are you here tonight? I do not mean even why you decided to start attending the centre. No, I mean why did you choose to come to this scheme of things? Why did you decide to visit this earthly human existence? Was there something specific that you wanted to do? Some area of life that you wanted to explore, or lessons that you wanted to learn? It's a big question. Some may argue that it's a ridiculous question. They might say that they did not choose to be here at all. They would maintain that they are simply the product of their parents' union. There was no existence for them before conception in their mother's womb. They did not choose this life. It came about entirely randomly. And so to ask the question, why did you come here, is absurd. They are here by accident, or coincidence, or luck. And they are just going to try and make the best of their limited time on the planet. There are other people in the world who would give a very different answer. For some, even though they may not believe in a prior existence to this one, nonetheless, do view life as having purpose. To the question, why are you here? They might reply that we humans have been created by an all-powerful God, and that the purpose of this life is to follow God's will, in order to win salvation and be granted eternal life in heaven when they die. Asking this same question to yet a different set of people will produce yet another reply. There are many people who are perfectly comfortable with the idea of previous existences and are therefore open to the idea that this life may have been chosen. They may see this as being just one in a series of existences we go through in an ascending order. In each, we strive to learn lessons and develop spiritually in order to reach the next higher level, with the ultimate aim of reaching a state of permanent purity, bliss, and happiness. Such people might tell you that they are here as part of their spiritual evolution. Have you ever asked yourself that question? Why am I here? What kind of response arises for you? Perhaps an answer comes up immediately. Many people do seem to have a strong sense of what they wish to accomplish in life, even from an early age. I know a man, the son of a family friend, who from the age of 7 knew he wanted to become a doctor. The aspiration never faded, and he eventually became a world-renowned surgeon and Harley Street consultant. Others may never really have known what direction to take. I remember the careers advice officer at school asking me what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't have a clue. And if you had told me back then that I would end up doing what I'm doing now, well, I wouldn't have believed you at all. Why is this important? If we can find a genuinely meaningful direction in life, then life begins to open up in all kinds of new and unexpected ways, and leads us towards a more fully integrated and fulfilling existence. As I heard one meditator put it recently, at long last, you finally come to feel like a round peg in a round hole. Tonight, I would like to look at the question, why are you here? In terms of what the Buddha called mundane right view. Mundane right view consists of a list of five statements about the nature of existence. It is maintained that these views are an accurate reflection of the way life really works. As such, the 5 points of mundane right view provide an ideal framework for pondering the question, why am I here? And gives us the possibility of discovering our true purpose in life. What are the 5 points? They are that generosity benefits the giver, that our actions have results, that there are mother and father, that there are other realms of existence, and finally, that there are teachers who know about these things and who can guide us. A long time ago, I knew someone who was very, very angry. Even as a child, he was extremely vicious and unkind. He had been born to parents who were both committed born-again Christians. From an early age, it was clear that he despised both them and their beliefs. The parents, for their part, could not understand what they had done that he should hold such a vehement attitude. They loved him, but nothing they tried could allay his hatred. It made them very sad. I heard about the chap recently. Apparently, he is still just as angry today and continues to blame his parents and their religion for all his many troubles. Did he choose to be born to those parents? Although it is likely that he would be outraged at the suggestion, Buddhism maintains that he did. But we need to be clear about this. He will have chosen rebirth into that family in a similar way that someone who repeatedly steals is choosing to experience prison in the future. The Buddha knew from his own unimpeded vision that we are all born countless times. Where we are born, to whom, and the early life circumstances we find ourselves in are determined in large part by how we have behaved previously. He called this wheel of endless rebirth samsara and taught that it is the passionate thirst for life that keeps the wheel of samsara in perpetual motion. So it is through our past actions that we choose the family we find ourselves in this time round. The kinds of actions we perform arise out of our beliefs, our aspirations, and our hang-ups. We will, therefore, tend towards a rebirth that reflects those underlying attitudes and attachments. From this, we can see clearly why the Buddha laid such emphasis on the importance and significance of our relationship with our parents. The Buddha taught that our parents are due the greatest respect for having brought us into the world and for having gone through all manner of hardships in bringing us up. Without them, we could not strive for enlightenment. And he said that even if we were to carry our mother and father on our shoulders for the rest of our lives, we could not repay the debt that we owe them. Our parents also have a more subtle influence on us and our path through life. There is a school of thought that suggests that early in life, each of us developed conditioned patterns of behaviour based on our relationship with our parents. This relationship can be seen as a power struggle, in which both parent and child develop strategies devised to control the other and to gain their energy. It is done to fill a perceived gap within us and to make us feel whole. What is this energy? It is the energy of attention. We want people to give us their attention. For example, if one or either parent is forceful and dominant, the child may develop an aloof, unresponsive attitude to them. The same pattern works the other way round too. If the parent is non-communicative, the child will tend to interrogate the parent or even become tyrannical. Each approach is carried out for the same purpose, to gain control of the other person's attention in order to feel fulfilled. Think for a moment. Have you ever had a relationship with someone who you felt was uncommunicative or unresponsive, and found yourself interrogating them, forever asking questions, probing them, trying to get them to open up? What is it that you wanted from them? You wanted them to pay attention to you. You wanted them to give you their energy, to make you feel whole. And the other person, the aloof character, what did he or she want? Why? For you to keep on chasing them, of course, so that you kept on giving them your attention and your energy, so that they felt whole. These ways of attention seeking are learned early in life. They then continue into our adult relationships and with our own offspring, thus repeating the cycle all over again. But this way of relating and responding to one another is very negative. If two people are both seeking to become whole through gaining the other's attention, someone is going to lose out, and conflict is bound to result. Two people, but only one whole being. The maths simply does not add up and can only lead to fractured relationships. But there is another side to the influence our parents have on us, a very positive influence. Each of our parents had their own life purpose to fulfill, just as much as we do. It is very helpful in trying to become more conscious of our own life goals to reflect on the very positive qualities that our parents displayed, to ponder on their views, attitudes, and aspirations. What particular areas of life were they interested in? What motivated them? And what were they really good at? What was important to them, philosophically, spiritually, or ethically? Having chosen our parents through our past actions, it would make perfect sense that what they stood for will, in some way, reflect our own attitudes and aspirations. There is a school of thought that goes so far as to suggest that what we are actually looking to do is to create a synthesis of the positive elements that each parent sought to bring together through their marriage. Reflecting on our own parents' values and aspirations can, therefore, make a very positive contribution in coming to understand why we are here. It may be the case, however, that when reflecting on our parents, we have habitually fallen into the conditioned thought patterns based in attention seeking. This means we might have ignored elements of their characters that may actually be very helpful to us to know. Whether they are still alive or not, pondering about our parents' positive qualities is to give our full attention to them, to voluntarily offer our energy in considering them rather than the other way around. Indeed, we can go further and say that until we have learned to let go of our attention seeking and learned instead how to give our attention, we will never find our true purpose in life. In a sense, you could say that the spiritual path is all about learning how to reverse the flow of energy from selfishly seeking it for oneself to giving it freely to others and to life in general. After all, what is mindfulness? Mindfulness is giving our full, undivided attention to whatever is occurring in the moment, in order to understand more and more about the workings of existence. What is loving kindness? Loving kindness is giving our full, undivided attention to another person, bringing to mind their positive qualities and wishing them well. What is insight meditation? Insight meditation is giving our full, undivided attention to observing the mark of transience in every mind-body experience, in order to dig up and destroy the roots of craving, hatred, and confusion that cause us to suffer. So following a spiritual way and pursuing our true purpose in life go hand in hand. Both revolve around giving up selfishness and opening up to life. And through following the Buddha's Noble Eightfold Path, that is exactly what we do. The Buddha said that generosity benefits the giver. The benefits of giving extend further than just the giving of material things. Having put aside selfish attention seeking, having pondered on our purpose in life, and having begun to give our full attention to life through developing mindfulness, we find that new avenues of exploration start to emerge. We begin to notice that opportunities to follow our chosen path are always available to us. We begin to get a sense of how interconnected everything is. Unexpected offers of help and weird coincidences start happening. A new faith emerges, a sense of rightness, that we are fulfilling our chosen purpose for this life. Giving our attention in this way really does benefit us personally. To illustrate the point, I would like to recount the following true story. A young man backpacking in southern India was sitting in a cafe, and his eye was caught by a poster on the wall advertising a particular kind of healing art. This man, early in his life, had rejected his parents' religious beliefs and had remained aloof to their selfless service to their church. But since coming to India, he had immersed himself in an entirely new culture that had a radically different attitude to spiritual matters. Notwithstanding his habitual aloofness, he found himself increasingly drawn to the mystical side of life. And he liked the sound of this particular healing art. It resonated with him, and he made a mental note to explore it further whenever the opportunity arose. Well, it so happened that after a couple of days, he began to experience a deep yearning to pack his bags and go to Varanasi, a holy city on the banks of the Ganges in northern India that he had visited on a previous trip. Arriving in Varanasi after a long train journey, he headed straight to the hotel that he had stayed at previously. The hotel only had one possible room he could reside in, a double, that was currently taken by a single occupant. The occupant, an Australian man, was happy to share the room. In the course of getting to know one another, the Australian man happened to mention that he had just finished a 10-day course in exactly the same healing art that had interested the backpacker. The course was being run by a Buddhist nun who was staying at another hotel close by. The following day, the Australian man introduced the backpacker to the nun, and shortly after, he began learning the discipline under her guidance. Coincidence? Perhaps. But you may begin to get a sense of how these things can start to unfold once we learn how to give up our selfish responses and begin to embrace the purpose we have set ourselves for this lifetime. Through giving our full attention to life, rather than forever seeking it, we begin to tap into a completely different form of energy. Coincidences start to occur. Doors of opportunity are flung open for us. We meet people who, consciously or not, help us along our way. And of course, we, in turn, find ourselves helping them too. Our lives start to take unexpected and welcome turns, and we begin then to truly fulfill our potential as human beings. It is interesting to note how the young man felt confident about accepting the guidance of the Buddhist nun, despite his previous attitude towards religion. This was a clear sign that he was beginning to master and overcome his attention-seeking tendencies, which for him manifested as aloofness. The Buddha laid great emphasis on the importance of coming under the guidance of a teacher. Part of the process of opening up to life is to recognize that in whatever area we have chosen to explore, there will be those with far greater knowledge and experience of the subject who are willing and able to teach us. It is wise then to adopt an attitude towards such people that will be most advantageous to us in our quest. It is very clear to a spiritual teacher whether a student is still caught up in their childhood drama or whether they are beginning to open up. If the student is mostly attention-seeking, they will try to take the teacher's energy. They might be very argumentative, or they may entirely dismiss the value of the teacher and ignore the guidance offered. They are like spiritual vampires, sucking all the energy towards them until the teacher has no more to give. Conversely, if the student is no longer trying to make themselves whole through other people, then their relationship with the teacher will be extremely positive. They will be open, able to listen and talk truthfully about their experience, and of course, they'll be happy to undertake instruction. To recap, the Buddha taught the 5 points of mundane right view. They are that generosity benefits the giver, that our actions have results, that there are mother and father, that there are other realms of existence, and finally, there are teachers who know about these things and who can guide us. Using these points as a framework, we can ponder on whether there is a genuinely meaningful direction for our lives to take. If we can let go of our attention-seeking strategies and learn to give our full attention to life, then life begins to open up in all kinds of new and unexpected ways and leads us into a more integrated and fulfilling existence. There are, of course, many meaningful directions we can take in life. Though the ways may be diverse, what unites us all is that we all share the same desire to find truly lasting fulfillment. And herein lies a problem, Because although we might find purpose and fulfillment through a particular direction we take in life, it is inevitable that one day we will again become dissatisfied and unfulfilled. Samsara, the wheel of rebirth, is a perpetual wandering with no real resting place. Although its highways and byways are infinite, with infinite potential for exploration, the reality is that every last component part of samsara is impermanent and in no way can provide the lasting peace, contentment, and wholeness that people seek. The Buddha's teaching on the 5 points of mundane right view undoubtedly does lead us towards greater happiness and fulfillment. But for true contentment that cannot be lost, we must also acquire supramundane wisdom. This is the wisdom that understands the truly transient, unsatisfactory, and uncontrollable nature of all sensory experience. It leads to non-attachment, to dispassion, and to the complete transcendence of samsaric existence altogether. It is not the case, as some suppose, that we are evolving ever upward to a higher plane of existence. No, samsara is more like an eternal game of snakes and ladders. We go up and down endlessly. What we need to do is to transcend the game altogether. It is a little bit like being on one of those treadmills at the gym. You might well run 3, 4, or even 10 miles, but for all your effort, have you actually gone anywhere? Stepping off the treadmill, one experiences the bliss of effortless being. Enlightenment is similar. It is to realize that for all your wandering through samsara, you have never been anywhere but right here, right now, the eternal, timeless moment you never left. It is the bliss of effortless being beyond time and space. Anyone who, through developing supramundane wisdom, comes to realize nibbana, the beyond, will tell you that it is understood perfectly that this really is the peace and contentment that everyone is struggling to find. And what's more, they will tell you that looking back at their life, there is not one moment, not one tiny sliver of experience that they have been through that they would change. Everything that happens to us and all the events in life we pass through, every success, every failure, every joy, every heartbreak, all the fortunes acquired and lost, all the hopes fulfilled and dashed, are absolutely right for us. They are all a part of our path. The moment of enlightenment could not have occurred without everything that had preceded it. Just as sitting here tonight, listening to the talk, is in a sense the end result of every decision you have ever made, so in the same way, the moment of enlightenment can only arise as a result of all our accumulated experience. It is the point at which we individually realize that all our attempts to find lasting fulfillment within the world will always fall short. We tried absolutely everything we could think of, pursued every conceivable direction in life in search of abiding peace, and could not find it. It is only then, at that moment of perfect surrender, that the mind finally turns away and leaps beyond the mundane universe altogether. Anyone who has found nibbana will tell you the same. To find the beyond is the one true purpose of life. It is ultimately what everyone is looking for. And when you find it, you will have the real answer to the question, why are you here?